Hello, and welcome to the Green Book Commentaries Podcast. I'm Dr. Arthur Plessa. Volume 14, Episode 38. In the beginning, there was chiropractic. Doctors of Chiropractic and student initiates, welcome back for another episode. Today, I want to take all chiropractors back to their chiropractic college. No, the financial aid department does not have some outstanding debt that you need to pay. Instead, I want you all to go back to your final year as a student. This is when you have more or less completed your foundational studies in anatomy, physiology, pathology, radiology, the list goes on. Now, your focus shifts more to chiropractic technique, your skill in analyzing the spine for subluxations and their adjustment. Today, we go back to your senior year. Coincidentally, today we begin the senior text in Volume 14. For those following along, Volume 14 is divided into four sections, from freshman to senior. We begin with the introduction of chiropractic terminology, the 33 principles, and the safety pin cycle. During our sophomore and junior texts, we delved into the anatomy and physiology of connecting the spine and nervous system with subluxation. With that, we now enter the senior text. This is where Stevenson further details such topics as the function and quality of innate intelligence, comparing universal and innate forces, and of course, more of the science of subluxation. Now that we have a good knowledge of the philosophy, science, and art of chiropractic, let's master it, that it will not get watered down, but rather be written upon our spine with indelible ink. But before we begin, I would like to play a fun game testing your knowledge of the things B.J. Palmer has been quoted for saying. My good friend and colleague, Dr. Matthew Wolfertz, finds it humorous when we see memes of B.J. Palmer with quoted statements from other chiropractors, or just plainly made up to fit a narrative. So with that, I'm going to give you three B.J. Palmer quotes, and you have to decide which one is false. Are you ready? One, every organ in your body is connected to the one under your hat. Two, chiropractic is the study of health and what causes people to live. Three, chiropractic is the treatment for the cause of disease. If you said that number three is the false quote, then you are correct. The first two quotes are from a B.J. Palmer publication titled As a Man Thinketh, which is full of his personal sayings, idioms, and chiropractic philosophy. Now, even though option three sounded technically right, let's explore why BJ would never express it as such. The words treatment and disease are medical terms, whereas a disease is the manifestation of a subluxation, and treatment is the medical procedure specific to that disease. Chiropractors adjust subluxations, which are the cause of dis-ease, aka the symptoms. In other words, we adjust the cause of dis-ease, not treat dis-ease directly. So, if you got that, then I commend you. as it is chiropractors like you which keep the principle and practice alive. Now, let's get into today's episode. As the title suggests, we're going to begin the senior text by going back from when Volume 14 was published in 1986 and to that fateful year of 1895 when it all began. If you went to a chiropractic college that was subluxation-centered, like Life University, Sherman, Palmer, or even Life West, then you've likely heard of the first chiropractic adjustment, all puns intended. Harvey Lillard was a janitor who worked in the same building that D.D. Palmer, the discoverer of chiropractic, had in his office. Harvey had lost his hearing 17 years prior when he was bent over in a stoop position, heard a pop sound in his back, and then went deaf. D.D. Palmer palpated Harvey's spine and found a large bump in his spine. D.D. reasoned that prior to this bump developing, while stooped over, Harvey could hear, and that after this bump developed, Harvey became deaf. Well, what would you have done if you were D.D. Palmer back in 1895? That's right. You have Harvey lay face down on the floor, since there aren't any adjusting table manufacturers at this point, and attempt to reduce that bump by shoving it with your hands. As fate would have it, after the third shove, Harvey Lillard could hear again. So, D.D. began to shove other spinal bumps of deaf people with much success. Logically, D.D. began to ask, if this bump caused deafness, could other bumps cause other diseases? D.D. tested this new working theory on people with other conditions, and again, he found success. It was around this time that D.D. thought it right to use a name more suitable than bumps of the spine. He initially changed from bump to dislocation. However, even though this was more descriptive than bump, D.D. would go on to use the term we still use today, subluxation. The adjustic thrust also went through various phases of development. It began with what was called a shove. This is how BJ described D.D.'s adjustment on Harvey Lillard, a crude shove. It was often painful, as the chiropractor would focus all their weight upon the thrust, causing a deep set. The next phase was that of pushes and pulls. To better describe their moves, think of our modern supine cervical rotary adjustment. It improved upon the crudeness of the former shove moves by making it more tolerable for the patient. However, these moves often moved multiple vertebrae rather than just the one intended. This now takes us to how exactly did D.D. Palmer locate subluxations? The first analysis was static palpation for, well, bumps that stick out from the spine. Wait, we're calling them subluxations now. Since every deviation was assumed a subluxation, it was really a guesswork. So it was common to have most or even all vertebrae adjusted back then. BJ wrote that it was common protocol to adjust from C7 downward to sacrum. Using this shotgun approach, the Palmers believed that a chiropractor would eventually find the causative subluxation, eventually getting the patient well. If you'll recall from Volume 25, yeah, I know that was a couple of years ago now, BJ wrote that using this protocol, only about 5% of sick people actually got well. While most would get excited about the 5% who experienced results, BJ would focus on the 95%, asking, why did they not experience results? This question gave rise to the development of the Merrick system, the neurological roadmap tracing diseases back to their respective spinal nerve and vertebral segment. So a heart condition patient who also had sciatica would likely have subluxations at T2 and L2 through L5 segments. This established the principle of less adjustments upon less segments for better results. Following Merrick, BJ developed majors and minors. This is where adjustments were further reduced in frequency and segments. So, in the previous case with a heart condition and sciatica, the heart condition would be the major subluxation, as that is the one most detrimental to health, while sciatica would be the minor subluxation. By focusing adjustments exclusively on T2 until the heart condition improved, innate intelligence could more readily use the limited material resources within the body to rebuild and restore cardiac function. In 1910, BJ would become the first chiropractor to use X-ray to see subluxations in the spine. This then-new technology would replace palpation to determine the direction of misalignment. Out of all the various methods of analysis personally developed by BJ Palmer, X-ray would remain as the gold standard for analyzing the misalignment and occlusion elements of a subluxation. Then, in 1924, the single greatest development in chiropractic was introduced, the neurokilometer. This instrument measured paraspinal skin temperature differentials caused by spinal nerve pressure and interference to nerve flow. To this day, this is the gold standard for measuring the pressure and interference elements of a subluxation. Now, before we begin our reading, let's review where we get the name chiropractic from. Dr. Samuel Weed, a minister who was knowledgeable in ancient languages, was the originator. Borrowing from the Greek, he combined the words chiro, meaning the hand, with praktos, meaning done. So we get chiropraktos, done by hand. We now begin our reading from volume 14, page 230. Senior text. The senior textbook is an elaboration of the principles of chiropractic, an advanced work in theory and practical phases. Article 304, dates. The history of chiropractic is the history of adjustments. Quotation from volume 4. Quote, although chiropractic was not so named until 1896, yet the naming of chiropractic was much like the naming of a baby. It was 9 months old before it was named. Chiropractic, in the beginning of the thoughts upon which it was named, dates back at least 5 years previous to 1895. During those 5 years, I review many of these writings. I find they talk about various phases of that which now constitutes some of the phases of our present-day philosophy, showing that my father was thinking along and towards those lines, which eventually suddenly crystallized in the accidental case of Harvey Lillard, after which it sprung suddenly into fire and produced the white-hot blaze. End quote. B.J. Palmer. As chiropractic grew, other important things useful in chiropractic were discovered. Palpation between 1895 and 1900. Nerve tracing, 1905. Merrick system, 1909. Spinograph, 1910. Taut and tender fibers, 1922. Neurokilometer, 1924. Note, I heard BJ explain taut fibers in 1920 in his classes, as if it were then old to him, but no one seemed to pay much attention to it until 1922, when he began to emphasize it. So 1922 is the date usually mentioned. Ralph Stevenson. Article 305, History of Adjusting. I prefer to quote B.J. Palmer in Majors and Minors, page 7, in order to tell the history of adjustments. The first patient who received a chiropractic adjustment was Harvey Lillard, a colored man. The incident, in brief, follows. He had been deaf 17 years, so much so that from the fourth floor of the building, where he was a janitor, he could not hear wagons moving or streetcars rolling on the streets below. When asked how he became deaf, his explanation follows. While in a cramped, stooped position, I felt and heard something pop in my back. Immediately, I went deaf. To one who was observant, a student, that would be an accidental eye-opener. It was to D.D. Palmer who asked, "What is the connection between the back and hearing in the ears?" He examined the back. By good fortune, the first case in which a spine was examined, with that thought in view, a large bump was found. It was not one of the common bumps we see today in palpation, but so prominent it could be seen with the eye. The following consequential reasoning occurred. If there was no bump when the hearing was good, and the production of this bump destroyed hearing, why don't the reduction of the bump restore hearing? The first attempt to correct what is now a subluxation was then made. The patient was put upon the floor, face down, and a shove-like movement given. The bump was reduced by the first three shoves, and in 3 days hearing was restored. Harvey could hear a watch tick at the average distance you and I can today. The next question was, if the reduction of one bump in one man restores hearing, why won't a similar bump in other people produce deafness? And if it does, why wouldn't the reduction of these bumps in the same way restore their hearing? It was tried on others. By a peculiar series of circumstances, the results did not come as readily in their cases, but eventually they came. Then the third question arose. If a bump in the back caused deafness, why not other parts of the spine produce other dis-ease? So our question has gradually enlarged until by a systematic series of investigations covering years, you have your chiropractic of today. Education advanced. After a period, we ceased calling them bumps. They became dislocations. We, at a later time, were impressed with the idea that this bump was not a dislocation. It was, in reality, not a dislocation, but partial, more assuming the character of a luxation, yet not a luxation. It was a subluxation. When we had assumed, as a matter of education, that breadth of ideals where they became subluxations, we no longer assumed to shove. We developed the push and pull principle, which was of various forms and methods. We began as a following period to study the spine from a mechanical point of view. Until this time, the only people who attempted to study the spine as a machine were osteopaths, although pathologically, they still regarded man as chemistry and physics. We confined our observations of mechanical ideas to the spine, so much so that we brought out the knowledge of the kinematics of the spine, both normal and abnormal, as to position, apposition, and subluxations. We then began the study of the pathological, traumatic, and anomalous conditions of the spine. At that time began the gathering of the osteological collection we now possess, for the purpose of elucidating the theories that held and propagation of others. It became necessary that we know the human spine. That was the keynote of the study of causes of diseases of man. We studied spines of all characters, thousands of other bones that we might better reach a new thought or idea in progress. How well that has been done, you know today. Hours, months, and years were spent in the study of dead bones to be able to give thoughts that may be taught in a few minutes. Yet it took years to reach the conclusions given in a few minutes. When we studied the spine, mechanically speaking, we realized that treatment was far-fetched in its application, as describing the thing we attempted to do, being a machine, mechanically constructed, mechanically subluxated, it should be mechanically adjusted. Then came the word adjustment. Approximately 6 years ago, we began a series of clinical tests or investigations from a new viewpoint. I refer to the spinograph. Until that period, the X-ray had not been used in its application to human spines in living individuals for the purpose of ascertaining the approximate detailed apposition of the vertebrae, normal, abnormal, and traumatic. When we made our first series of spinographs, we were the first to touch this vital question. There existed no previous technique for observations or work. It became necessary to develop a system of taking spinographs to prove that subluxations existed, where and of what character. We began tabulating these observations, which today we are ready to say makes another step. These conclusions are based upon the readings and studies of over 50,000 spinographs, all of which were taken in our laboratory with this definite end in view. It is no longer sufficient to say that we adjust with recoil. We are ready for our next step, which you may call 206. Although I prefer the toggle recoil because of its application by the new series of observations made from these spinographic facts. History is his story. The his, in this case, being the author who has lived it, being the cause for a large majority of it. Therefore, the source of the facts here recorded could not be improved. B.J. Palmer. Article 306, Four Viewpoints of Area Adjusted. From the question of area of the spine worked upon, there have been four viewpoints in adjusting work. 1. Ordinarily, we shoved but one of the backbones and our patient got well, all of which was pure accident, for we did not know why this place should. Neither was there a rule for application. Ask where to shove for this or that, and we didn't know. The spine was unexplored territory. 2. being unexplored territory, wishing to get our case as well, irrespective of what he had, knowing that it came from the spine somewhere, we shoved every backbone at each sitting each day. We began at the seventh cervical and went clear down to the sacrum. We did not shove cervical vertebrae in those days. We were afraid to. We shoved them all, one by one, on the ground that, A, we didn't know where to shove for any one particular trouble. B, we had no Merrick system. The spine was not mapped out. C, therefore, hit them all to be sure to hit the one involved. It was not a hit or miss proposition. It was a hit them all method, so we couldn't help but get the one involved. It was a case of the lazy man's load. Being too indolent to think or reason, he made a shotgun series of shoves. Much like Uncle Howard Nutting says, he got the burglar in the house. He started at the garret, went clean down to the cellar, shooting into every corner where a burglar could hide. Therefore, he was sure he got the burglar. Notwithstanding, the extreme shotgun method was in vogue in the chiropractic styles of 1896 and 1897. Notwithstanding, a major application of our Merrick system began in 1898, and the major application went out of style and has been ever since. Yet, inconsistent as it now appears, there is one lone advocate in our ranks who insists upon the every vertebra adjustment idea today. Not being taught today in any chiropractic school, not being known by the largest majority of our ranks. It is not known except to the oldest chiropractors. Hence, when it is sprung at some meeting, it awakens a bit of interest. Not because of its reason or logic or brilliancy of deduction, but because of its startling contrasting nature. 3. The third viewpoint came following the deduction of the radiation of nerves from specific parts of the spine to the specific organs of the body. The Merrick system being the basis, the specific system of adjustment came into vogue. We now adjusted only those subluxations for which the patient had a dis-ease. For example, our case has heart, stomach, liver, and bowel troubles. The subluxations, a la Merrick system, were HP, heart place, SP, stomach place, KP, kidney place, and PP, private place. This man, instead of getting 17 shoves on the back, got but 4, one for each. It eliminated the useless and concentrated on the useful. It was direct, a subluxation for a dis-ease, thus its title, specific. 4. The fourth viewpoint is our present major and minors, wherein we even make the specific system a major and minor one in reality. Under this system, we classify the symptoms of the four given troubles above and possibly find that 2 or 3 of the dis-eases this case has are adaptive to the 1 or 2 subluxations, hence are minors of the major, the adjustment of the latter taking care of the former. There have been in reality 4 periods in the history of chiropractic moves. First, the shove, with its variations from numbers 1 to 78. Second, the push and pull, with its changes from numbers 70 to 200. Third, the recoil with its modes from numbers 201 to 205. Fourth, the period of the toggle recoil, or 206. Article 307, the Palmer toggle recoil. The Palmer toggle recoil, number 206, is still being used as the one specific and best move, which accomplishes the greatest percentage of adjustments. However, since the time the above was written by BJ, the new posture, or knee posture, or Palmer posture, came into use as a new phase about 1922. It is Dr. Palmer's opinion, supported by the faculty of the PSC, that it is the best posture for the patient, which, used with number 206, is the best combination to date. Article 308, how chiropractic was named. Chiropractic was named by Dr. Samuel H. Weed, a minister well-versed in ancient languages. Chiropractic is a word composed for the Greek, chire, meaning the hand, and praktos, meaning done, hence, done by hand. Chiropractic has always run true to its name. The chiropractor adjusts subluxations with his hands only, and therefore must have dexterity and skill. This is art. Thank you for joining me for another episode. I'm Dr. Arthur Plessa. This has been the Green Book Commentaries Podcast.